giving the direction about how do we move forward with the process. Members and civil society organizations that are present here and the stakeholders that are present, I would really like to welcome you and also to thank you very much for your participation thus far in the process. I think this process, the participation of the public in this process is unparalleled by any process of the appointment of the public protector. And I think this is something that we should celebrate in South Africa because it's an indication that our democracy is maturing. And this does not suggest that it is anyway perfect, but at least we are getting members of society beginning to have their say. We've engaged a number of stakeholders, and in mind, I actually have a very important meeting that I had with the, which was organized by the Southern African Catholic Bishops Conference. They organized a roundtable where they invited a range of stakeholders, and we had the full house at the I think it's called Lodge, you know, something like that. Or townhouse. And, you know, the comments that were coming there, even in terms of the procedure that we should be following, the qualities of the public protector, I mean, I was really impressed by the extent to which they did the research. And I think it's a good indication that South Africans are alive and well to processes of parliament. I also do want to acknowledge that we have also opened this process, as you know, over and above just a member of the public nominating candidates. We also opened the process to members of the public to raise objections or objections or comments. And I must say that we actually had a range of comments, but those comments, most of them center around at least about 12 individuals or nominees or applicants, whichever way you wish to call them. And the Corruption Watch is also one of the those organizations that have done extensive work in some candidates, but as repeatedly said by myself as the chair of this ad hoc committee, we value the public views. However, we also have to make sure that whatever comments or whatever that are made on a particular individual, they are not necessarily the grounds for disqualifying an individual. What they do is that they assist us in taking an informed decision. And those questions or comments that are raised on specific individuals, should those individuals make it to the shortlist, the panel, which is the members of this ad hoc committee, will have to pose those questions to those individuals to get clarity on the questions that have come up. So, members, I think it's important for us to make sure that as much as possible, we continue with this process to the best of our ability. Of course, it's not going to be a perfect process. As you know, it's the first time that this process is as intense as it is. And I must thank the staff who have, I mean, I've really had to push these people, I must tell you. And remember, we received the closing date for public comments and for the candidates to submit their motivations over and above the CVs. We're just giving, and let me explain why we had to send questionnaires to the nominees. We sent questionnaires specifically because we wanted them to have an opportunity to make disclosures if they have certain things hanging on them. And we thought that that was a good means test for fit and proper. Because if you are not going to disclose when you are given an opportunity, of course we were not expecting you when we all submitted your CV, but when we then sent you a questionnaire, we were giving you an opportunity to disclose any information that may be critical. committee that may impact on the decision of the committee. So I think on our side, as much as possible, we did the best we could. And I do want to apologize on behalf of the staff. I had asked the staff to capture all the questionnaires. We tried to send all the questionnaires to all members last night, but other members, like I live in Akisha Park, and the internet work there is very bad, and I'm sure maybe there are other members who may not have been able to access their emails last night. But those questionnaires are important, especially when we are going to deal with the shortlisting. Because if we shortlist somebody and we actually find that there is something from the public that has been raised, that is obviously raising eyebrows, we obviously, as a committee, we have to take that into account, because the process of public participation was not a tick box exercise. It was a process that we had to undertake, also to give the respect that this office or this chapter institution deserves. And since this is the appointment of the public protector, it is very important that we take the views of the public seriously. Members, today we have intended to deal with the normal issues that we deal with, which will be your opening and welcome, which I've just done now, and I'm sure all of you are feeling welcome. And the next step was going to the approval of the agenda and the consideration of previous minutes. If there are any questions on previous minutes or any issues that may not have been captured accurately, and we are also wanted us to adopt the minutes, because this is an important record. And remember, we are seeking a precedent here. Other processes in future will not be able to float, you know, they will not be able to do less than what has happened in this process. So it's important for us to remember that this process will have to be properly documented. And that is why I'm saying we do need to make sure that we adopt these means, so that whatever that is going in there, we know that it's a record that is going to be in the institutional memory, and that will be revisited in future, and that will be guiding future processes. And if there are any matters that are arising from the minutes, when members can raise those, but the substantive matters that we are going to be dealing with today is obviously the criteria for shortlisting. I had requested the staff to make a presentation. We have discussed at least about 5 key broad thematic areas that we think are going to be critical in us taking into account when we are shortlisting and ultimately in appointing the person who will become the public protector. And I think we will have to discuss that criteria. The member of the staff will be presenting, I think, 15. He's going to make that presentation, and then members can add or subtract on that one. The other critical issue, remember, members, we received 73 nominations, and these are just the written nominations. So remember, those that were not written, we decided to drop them off the list. So the number could have gone as high as over 100. But we decided, because some of them were done over the phone, during telephonic interviews, and the people will be nominating sometimes through me, and we will ask them, no, you don't nominate through the chair. You have to put your nomination in writing, and it's got to go to Mr. Bonani, who was the one who was even in the advert, receiving all nominations. Unfortunately, some people did not necessarily do that, and some of them subsequently checked with the people that they wished to nominate, and most people they wished to nominate had declined, they were not available. And some of the names, though we received the written nominations, but the people that were nominated, we said they were not available. And those names were then eliminated in the process, which is why we ended up with 59 nominations. And those are the nominations that we posted in our website, and from which, I'm going to say that. Those were the nominations that were posted to our website. Members, you must remember, we opened this process for public comment. And when we did that, we did not anticipate that it may be people who have been nominated and had accepted and who have actually proved that they did, they were nominated, but they don't see their names appearing on the list. So there were additional 5 names, if I'm not mistaken, Donahue? 6 names, which is why we ended up with 54 names. Okay. We ended up with 54 names. My athletic teacher said, no, Bonani, that's then it's fine. Bonani, till I went to school. it's actually 5 people, okay. Now, we decided that although members will have to make a decision whether they want to consider those 4 names, those 5 names, but what we then did, because we are working on very, very tight time frame, we decided to post, I authorized the members to include those names in the list for public comments. So the public comments that we received, some of the comments were on those names as well, because we didn't want to have to reopen the process for those names. And the members will then have to make a decision whether they will accept those names for consideration, for shortlisting. As the chairperson, I can assure you, I did see the proof, I checked with the staff, and it appears as though Mr. Bonani, during that period from which they sent this email, his system was not working to its full capacity, so it did not, for some strange reason, it may have sent it to the trash box or whatever. But when they saw the proof, I verified that they indeed submitted their application. So the members will then choose whether to accept those names or not. So which means that we are going to have 64 names from which to make our shortlisting. I must also say this. We also sent the questionnaires, we also sent to those people that are not necessarily in the 59. And the reason for that was to really try and short-circuit the process so that if the committee chooses to consider those names, the information that has been sourced from the nominees or applicants is also available. So that's what we tried to do. And I'm hoping that the members will bear with us. This process, as much as possible, is very transparent, and we are trying as much as possible to be as accountable. And there may be some weaknesses in the process, but you must also understand that it's the first time that this office has received such intense public scrutiny and interest. So you must understand that as much as possible, we are trying to understand. I must say that we do have some of the names out of the 64 names that we got. Before we go to the, I just think that it's important for me in my opening remarks to say those things. In your list, in your pack, you've received, we sent members, and I hope all members did receive all the 64 CVs. Is there any member that didn't receive the CV? We tried to courier them to you. We also sent them electronically, because we said in case system say us, it is the courier should be there. You will be able to have your hard copy. So I'm glad that there is no one that says they never received the CV. Because remember, the CVs are going to be the primary source of information that we are going to use. We are also going to be taking into account the public comments, because they are very important. But in taking the public comments, we must remember that if a matter is just an allegation, it will not be fair on our part to disqualify somebody on the basis of an allegation. the best thing will be to also engage that particular person if they are making a 2D short film, to engage that person during the interview process or even before the interview process. Members, you must, and I hope all of you, you have the list before you. We have in this list, we have subsequently received declines from number 10, and I think Nicholas Hazel, who declined in your list. I hope all of you have this list. We also received Mr. Malcolm Checo, who withdrew from the process. I think it was quite intense, and I'm sure many people, they didn't expect any process was going to be as it had become. Some of them decided to withdraw. We also received a withdrawal from Mr. Cameron Tedra. And the names of those, and I think those are the only decline and subsequent withdrawals. And that reduces our number. I must also say that I also want to draw your attention to number 56, Mr. Solomon Makonja, who sent before but received after closing test. Now, this is very important. What we actually have, we have a situation here which we have to resolve. In certain instances, we received the nomination before the closing date. Okay. But you will find that the supporting documentation and the supporting documentation and the letter of acceptance of the nomination was received after the closing date. Now, we need to make a decision whether we are considering those or not. So that is the case with number 50. That's the case with number 56. And number 57 as well, we have the same case with number 57. And number 59, Mr. Elaine Bernardin, sent before, but received at a closing date. Number 60, Soledad Madassa, and it was also, we received on time, the nomination was received on time, but in certain instances, we actually received the actual documentation after the closing date, and Mogani Majola. Now, members, you will have to exercise your discretion whether we are taking those or not before we proceed to the next level. The first one is, do we accept the names that we subsequently determined that they had in fact sent the nominations? I just want to hear your views on that one. Yes, that's Honorable Matop.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. On the first issue of names which were sent, but then the system of Mr. Bonani had some challenges, I think the committee we need to accept.
Okay, do we have any deviating views for that? Yes, Honorable
Sir? It's not a deviation, it's not a deviation.
Okay.
I just thought it may be very useful to formally adopt the agenda and then deal with the issues in accordance.
Okay, thank you very much. I think that is a good comment. In fact, it was covering my own opening remarks, because the problem is that with the opening remarks, you get confused about when to actually move to the next action. But that was my report. That opening remarks was also my report. I was just taking you through on what happened from the last time we met. So at this stage, let me adopt the agenda, Minister. Yes, Honorable Sir?
Thank you. I think, Chair, you've made some opening comments, which I'm grateful for. I think the emphasis has been on public participation and the need for that. Now, you did alert to some of the challenges with the committees and the public participation documents being received, and regrettably, I haven't received all the documents yet. We discussed that earlier. I have received the Corruption Watch documents. I haven't received the other comments. So we need to have a discussion around the agenda before we accept it. To what degree are we able to continue there are a number of items that we can discuss, such as whether we accept the nominations that where the documentation came later and the criteria. But I think it's very important if we do also look at the minutes that we made it very clear that before we shortlist, you remember I actually raised the time schedule and said we need to make sure that we receive all the public submissions so that we can discuss it before we shortlist. And so that is an issue that we need to find a way that during the course of today we can at least look at the documentation. The question is, before we embark on the shortlisting process, because we need to do justice. As you've correctly pointed out, this is a very important issue. There's a huge amount of public interest in it, and we have set a very, very high standard of public participation. We're not dying of what people say, but it is important that we do consider it as a committee. And at this stage, I do not have all the documentation, so I'm not able to do that. So my suggestion is, before we formally accept the agenda, we need to have a discussion around the issue, how we take the process forward as to the shortlisting. Can we not discuss the other issues that are the briefing, and maybe by lunchtime we would have got all the documentation, and we can then see to what degree we can continue with that process. Thank you.
Well, I can assure you that you will be getting that documentation. The staff are busy printing some of them now, and those who did not receive, are there any members who did not receive the public comment, other than Corruption Watch, because Corruption Watch sent earlier and we forwarded to you that one. Is there anybody who didn't receive? We only have two. Members, can you please speak out and don't sing, because I'm not going to understand what you're saying.
We received the public comments, the summary of public comments early this morning.
Okay, how many received it this morning? No, but you haven't received. You sent another, but you didn't receive.
This morning, I just received the time.
Oh, you just received it now.
But I haven't received the questionnaires, all those other documents yet that we're going to get. Okay. You understand the hard copies going to be made.
Okay. All right. No, fair enough.
And it would be a concern that all the members of the ANC have already received the documents. Is this electronically received last night? But Jay, you also indicated that you had difficulty last night receiving the documents.
Yes, you said. Yes. I think you are making a very serious insinuation, member. And I would like you to withdraw that, because I have not distributed any information to the ANC. I don't distribute documents. The documents are distributed by the staff.
Yes.
And the response I got from the staff was that they did send the document. As a matter of fact, for your own record, Honorable Staff, I did not receive the post, the hard copies by mail. They sent them back here. And Mr. Bonan is right next to me. Yesterday he said to me, Dr. Khoza, I have actually put your packet in your cubicle, and I couldn't find it. So this morning, I relied heavily on electronic records. Even my son was the chair. I don't know what happened, but I did not get that the one that was put in my cubicle, so it wasn't there. So it's not just a problem that was affecting only you, because you are opposition. As much as possible, I want your voices heard in this committee. This is a multi-party committee, and I would not like to hear you casting aspersions.
Yes, only. I think you misunderstood me. At no stage did I say you circulated. In fact, I said you said to me earlier that you also did not receive the documentation. So really, it is not my intention to cast aspersions on the ANC at all. It's we are all struggling to have the relevant documentation so that we can be properly prepared. And if that was what it was perceived, then I do was fortunate.
Thank you very much, Honourable Sir. Honourable Sir?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I suffer from a chain problem, because I think that if we were to proceed to shortlist at this stage without the benefit of the questionnaires and without the benefit of having properly considered the public comments that have been made on the nominees that have been proposed or nominated, then I think we might find ourselves doing a disservice to the process. And even although it's in a slightly different context, you would have known that the Constitutional Court dealt with the issue of public participation quite fully in the Doctors for Life case. And I think that if we were to give the public a meaningful opportunity to participate, that meaningful opportunity means that we need to take the comments into proper account, even if those might affect the people that we might shortlist or not shortlist, as the case might be. So I think it's entirely reasonable. I think there's much on the agenda that we can deal with this morning, but I think it is only reasonable to allow us to take those comments into proper consideration before we proceed with the shortlisting process.
Okay, Honourable Bongo and Honourable Masolo after Bongo. I will come to you, Honourable Bongo.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. I wish to raise this and to adopt the agenda as it is presented. I understand now that all members have the comments with them, and the copy of the series of the appearance was sent to us, I think, 2 weeks or 3 ago. So we had an ample chance to look at the real series of the applicants. So I suggest that we use the Act for shortlisting purposes. If there's somebody whose name has been raised by the public in terms of a comment and he happens to meet the criteria of the shortlist, we'll then compare what the public has said. But I need to say is that not all issues that are raised by the public are issues that we will just use in committee. Others are issues that if they are shortlisted, we have to verify with them and ask them about the issues that are raised by the public. So I want us to look at the issue of the public participation in the context of us having to refer with the information that we have and adopt the agenda, because the criteria to use in the Act not necessarily in the comments themselves. So what we've done when we're at home, we'll just exchange the notes in terms of that, and then we proceed with the agenda as it is. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I really just wanted to add that let's adopt the agenda, and having done that, there's ample space in the proposed agenda. Suppose we will adopt it. There's ample space to deal with a whole range of issues that are being raised now.
Thanks, Jefferson. Greetings to all the honored members and members of the public. Firstly, Chair, let me say that I didn't receive the documents you're talking about, the gratitude service. Well, I know you have made yourself clear on those issues. And also, coming to the agenda, Chair, my view is that some of the matters can be discussed today. But before we adopt the agenda, seemingly we must firstly agree to item 7. In light of the fact that there are some documents that are still being printed and will be supplied to it, my future question is that this is a very critical task that has been given by the Parliament. And someone has said that there is a high public interest in the matter. Inasmuch as we will not be forced to abide by the remarks of the public, but for the fair democratic values, we have to take into consideration or have regard of what the public has said. Now, Chair, I propose that maybe we finalize the issue of item 7, whether we are going ahead with the shortlisting or we discuss all other matters or put this one on hold in the light that there is still some in public information that is still coming. That's my view.
Okay, thank you very much, members. I've listened to all your comments and your suggestions. And from the Chair, I think let's defer item number 3 and put it as the last item, or probably in item number, just after number 6, let's put it as item number 5, because the other items, in other words, where you have item number 6, which is announcement, let's just put it there. And the reason why I am motivating that rather change it, defer it to the latter part of the agenda, is because I also wanted to make sure that during this process, we can make sure that members do receive that document, those who have not received that document. And secondly, I also wanted, because I've had the opportunity to look into this message, and the comments that were made were only the comments that were made by the members of the public in respect of the following candidates, and they are not a very long list. I'm just drawing this to your attention so that you can exercise you can process this matter. I am saying the public comments received are on Mr. Dalibofu J.B. Sibanyoni, Humphrey Rapele, Loiso Mulwana, Philip Dekratus Naidu, Sofnoko, Judge Tsai, Tamo Gumbi, Vango Lukana, Raymond Chalom, Nonko Sibetwayo, and Isham Mohammed. And I'm putting the other comments aside, the ones that were sent by Corruption Watch, because none of you have said you have not received those. I'm talking about the ones that you say you have received. In that, I am not necessarily saying we're going to go ahead with the shortlisting, but I am saying let's consider all the other matters. And when we get to that stage, and we have also received the comments, because I am hoping that by next stage, everyone would be having the information before them, we can then make an informed decision. Honorable Rupert, Brendan Bach, you have your hand up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Constitution enjoins us quite clearly to consider that the public protector shall be a South African citizen who is a fit and proper person to hold such office. Without properly considering both the public comments and doing our own research on candidates, we will be unable to decide whether anybody on the shortlist is a fit and proper person. And in my view, that is an extremely important characteristic of the public protector. And the public has every right to expect us to take the Constitution seriously, besides which we are by law enjoined to comply with the Constitution. Thank you.
You know, there is something that I find very interesting now. Members, I don't think there is any one of you who has any doubt whatsoever about the importance of the public in this process. And I have no doubt in my mind that everything that I was doing, engaging with stakeholders, taking into account their comments, making sure that as we received the comments, we had our own staff who were able to verify some of the information, and they would also be giving their own comments on that. So I do not want anybody to suggest that other members are considering the public less than others. I think we are all considering the members of the public. They are very important. Hence, we have been very open with this process. And members, all I am saying now, the matter before you, it is not necessarily at the stage that we are going to be proceeding with the actual shortlisting. All I am saying is that can the members accept to the agenda, except for one amendment, that we move the shortlisting, which is declare the candidates, to the end, where we are then going after considering the criteria, considering everything else that is in the agenda, we can then make an informed decision. That's all I am saying at this stage. I am not saying we shouldn't take public comments into account, nor am I suggesting that they are less important. I'm here saying, let's amend the agenda at this stage, so that item number 3 goes to the tail end of the agenda, because obviously we need to apply our minds on it. Is that acceptable, members? Is there anybody who objects to that? Thank you very much. Members, the agenda is adopted. Members, you have the minutes of the 1st of June 2016. Before you, it's not a very long list, It's not a very long minute. Are there any corrections on page 1, which is your cover page? Page 2? Page 3? Yes, Honourable.
Mr. President, thank you very much. In page 2 of the minute, item 3, the briefing by the parliamentary legal advisor, I think in the last line there we've got a sentence starting with this legal opinion should not be confidential. So I'm not quite sure what this all about, because we have discussed the document and members have asked whether that document was confidential, and you know, we agreed because it was a public meeting.
Friend, a set of minutes. I don't know what do you have there, because the one I have doesn't have that. Does anybody have that? I don't know. I don't know which document does she have. Huh? Okay, it's not my version either. Maybe members of staff sent a draft to I say to you, Honorable Second. Yeah, but it's not in the minutes. I think we do now have a correct copy, Honorable Second. Thank you. Yeah, I don't know what actually happened. And I must apologize on behalf of the staff. I must tell you, I know I can be extremely pushy, and I've been trying to get them. No, I did, actually, because I told them that we need to meet the deadline, and we had to meet the deadline. So I've made them to work much harder than they are normally used to. So I made sure that they have a proper minute to be considered. At the same time, they needed to get all the documentation here in time. But I do know that they tried their best, and I apologize if there are any mishaps in the process. It's because they were working under enormous pressure. Okay. Thank you, members. Shall we then accept the minutes as the true reflection of the record? Thank you. On page 3, yes. Can you please speak on the mic?
The advert to Rangwa 3 was reported June 29, 2016. Just the scroll
in a type. Oh, there's a graphical error. Can you make sure that that is corrected? With that correction, do we accept the minutes? Thank you, members. I think the Honorable Machapo moves and Honorable Schweitzer seconds. Is that right? I saw your hand going up. Okay, thank you. Okay, members, let's move to item number 2, the criteria for the shortlist. I've requested Christine and the team to prepare the criteria for shortlist, and I must say, and I must also again once more thank the Southern African Catholic Bishops Conference for inviting me to the round table, and for inviting all the different stakeholders. I know Corruption Watch was there, Kavishay was there, and it was also my fellow panelists. And we had a very good engagement on that day. Subsequently, we came back, and we put something together, and Christine is actually going to take you through. We decided that we should focus on key thematic areas, and Christine is going to be taking us through that, and the members will then discuss whether they are in agreement with that or not. Over to you, Christine.
Good morning. I think we had a very short presentation. There's a lot of initial slides that I'm going to just skip through, but they're really a recap of where we've been. So this is our recap of our process so far. We've got a deadline on the 31st of August, 2016. We've already met twice. We agreed to a public participation process, so we know we've got the public comments in now. And there was also a questionnaire that was sent out to the candidates, and those questionnaires have been received as well. and then this is really the focus is around the selection criteria. Just again a recap of what I term the essential qualifications, and those are the ones found in Section 1 and 3 of the Constitution, and Section 1A of the Public Sector Act. So as we remember, it's the public sector needs to be a South African citizen, and he or she must be a fit person to hold a public office, and comply with any other requirements prescribed by national legislation. People, if I'm talking too fast, I'm feeling a bit nervous, and I can hear my voice is raising. In terms of Section 1A3 of the Public Protector Act, the public protector must be a judge or a practicing attorney or advocate for at least 10 years, qualified to be admitted and has lectured in law at university for at least 10 years, with specialized knowledge in the administration of justice, public administration, or public finance for at least 10 years, at least for at least 10 years, or a combination of any of those, but not the judge. This is what I found quite interesting at that workshop around, or at that Catholic Bishops Conference held on last 2 weeks ago. We were alerted to the surveys that they had conducted, corruption was conducted. And they surveyed A3 staff at the Public Protector South Africa office. And what the results found is among the staff, being a judge was considered to be the most important qualification to have, followed by being an admitted attorney or advocate with at least 10 years' experience in practice. There was also a survey that was admitted to 23 MDs, and that found that for MPs, having at least 10 years' experience in the administration of justice, public administration or public finance, that was the most important qualification. That was followed by being an admitted advocate or attorney with at least 10 years of experience in practice. For both sets of respondents, being an MP was regarded as being the least important qualification to have. Those are the formal qualifications, and what you're really asked to look at as a team was going beyond the essentials. So, borrowed a little bit from the JSC process and also a little bit from the results of the surveys which we found in case law, and we came up with some of our thoughts regarding things to consider, asking whether a candidate is a person of integrity, does the candidate display the necessary compassion and motivation, is the candidate technically experienced and experienced with regards to the values and needs of our society, is the candidate technically competent with the capacity to give expression to the values of the Constitution. Interestingly, we found the courts have described public protection in various ways, and these kind of descriptive words are kind of independent, impartial, capable of exercising power without fear, favor, or prejudice, and that comes directly from the Constitution. Also courageous, vigilance, has conviction of purpose, not a passive adjudicator between citizens, has a proactive function, has an open and inquiring mind, is dignified, is beyond reproach, is a person of stature, suitably qualified and an anti-corruption champion. So drawing all this stuff together, we came up with four main areas. The first is character, the second is experience, the third is knowledge, and the fourth is skills. And underneath those, and those aren't in any particular order, but in terms of character, we're looking at, is the person independent-minded? Is the person impartial? Has he or she the ability to perform the functions without fear, favor, or prejudice? Has the person integrity? Is he or she honest? And then I think, I haven't added this here, but I think it will also be very important, is has the person a bit of passion? Has the person shown some kind of public commitment to our country? Then in terms of experience, legal experience, investigative experience, knowledge of public institutions, and public finance. Around knowledge, things that would be regarded as important are knowledge of good governance, an understanding of social justice system, and is in touch with what is happening in society. A person who's knowledge of the guiding legislation in the Constitution, has knowledge of investigations, has knowledge of public finance. And in terms of skills, we'll be looking for somebody with leadership skills, somebody with a vision, somebody who's able to communicate. Remember, the public sector will not only also investigative and analytical skills, as well as more recently, the perpetrators really moved towards a lot of mediation, so conflict resolution skills. In terms of shortlisting, should I go on to that? When we had a look at the previous processes around how the previous ad hoc committees had dealt with appointments for the public sector, and there are no formal guidelines. The previous committees, their processes don't really provide us with a great deal of guidance. So really it's up to the committee to design its own process. I did a little bit of summing up. I think we received 78 applications for nominations, of which I've counted 17 out of client was due, and four could not be contacted for the nomination. And then further, six were received after the closing date, but we were very confident in six before. So that's just a bit far, okay. As agreed, applications and nominations were having captured, and then in addition, a questionnaire was circulated. So that's what we've done, that's where we are. In terms of shortlisting, the kinds of things that we would need to think about is, again, discussion of the actual nominations and applications received, discussion of the public comments received and the candidate replies to the questionnaire, the number of quest candidates that the committee would want to shortlist, and then how will the actual selection process take place. Okay, thanks. I have a few questions on the interview.
I don't think you should go to the questions for the interview. Let's first of all deal with the issues around the criteria for shortlisting. Are there any comments, members? Honourable Kong, and Abdali, Honourable Sir.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think let me start by appreciating the presentation. I think it's quite a good presentation. Thank you, Christine. Chair, I want to come with the suggestion in the light of the presentation that's been made. Because from where I'm sitting, I think the candidates must demonstrate the high level of experience in terms of legal experience. But secondly, the candidate must also display, which I think should be a bit lacking in the document, the managerial skills. And must also display a clear understanding of a development state. And the candidate must also know the spheres of government that we have and how do they relate with each other, because that will be very important for this chapter 9 institution. But lastly, to demonstrate financial management. And in that regard, I suggest that all the candidates will be shortlisted, prepare a presentation at least for 20 minutes so that we are able to test all these things that we have counted. But I've seen the presentation by Christine. A lot of other issues are also listed, but I think if we can give a candidate 20 minutes presentation and then another 25 minutes will be for engagement with the committee, I think then we'll be able to respond to the document that is submitted by the staff. Thank you.
Well, Honourable Bongo, you are now going into the actual modalities, but of the actual interview, which you are making excellent suggestions, but I would suggest that we park those for now, and let's just deal with the criteria at this stage. Honourable Swart, then after that, Honourable Swart.
Now, one of the challenges going through the CVs is a number of people indicate that they are an advocate or an attorney, and you don't see that they have actually practiced as an advocate or an attorney. So when we're going through and we're applying the criteria that are here, we need to have sufficient information from a number of people as to whether they were admitted as an advocate, whether they practiced, or whether they're just calling themselves an advocate. That's just one example. But it's going to require us using the Spirit set out in 1AB, all those, it's going to require us, because in some circumstances, although the Acts refers to all, you might have a person that calls himself an advocate that actually has cumulative administration of justice or public administration without necessarily practice as an advocate. So we're going to need a lot of wisdom when we go through applying the criteria that is set out here to establish whether they actually do comply with the required statutory that's set out here, the requisites. And under just in one or two instances, the comments from Corruption Watch indicated there was uncertainty as to whether there was compliance with the statutory requirements. So it's very helpful, the input that we've got. And I think that as we go forward with the process, it will be able to be helpful to apply what we've heard this morning. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. And I, again, would like to thank, express my appreciation for the presentation, which I think goes a long way to clarify the thoughts on the matter. Well, what I'd like to suggest, it really talks to the block called character, where somebody says the person must be independent, impartial, ability to perform functions without fear of failure or prejudice. That is, of course, absolutely right. But it is also the way in which a particular person is perceived to do that. And here I'm talking about what sometimes in courts gets referred to as a reasonable apprehension of bias. And I think we need to, in selecting that person, be absolutely certain that it's not only that the person themselves displays independence and impartiality and so on and so forth, but that that person is reasonably perceived to not be biased in any way, so as to maintain and uphold the reputation that the public protector has as being an impartial arbiter dedicated to reading of corruption, maladministration, and other matters. So I think in assessing them, it's not only objectively do they have those, but do are they seen to have them as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to add to Mr. Sparks' point of advocacy and attorneys. I think it would be very helpful if we could have some sort of documentary proof that they are in fact limited advocacy or attorneys in good standing. The mere saying that one is an advocate and attorney doesn't in fact make it so.
Yes,
one
Chairperson,
the nominees or applicants should meet the research requirement as alluded to by my colleague. And then again, as Christine has also alluded to in terms of knowledge and skills, and again, what Honorable Breitenbach has referred to, in most cases, the applicants or nominees have attached their letters of good lending from their various law societies and the bar. Normally, that appears on their CVs. And again, Chairperson, we need to look also in terms of representativity, in terms of gender and South African demographics, and also take into account public comments in terms of Section 1 and different Section 59(1) of the Constitution. Thank you, Chair.
Any other comments? Members, you know, for just to make sure that I understand what's been said here, I decided that we need to break the criteria into four broad categories. The first category, I think, should be the knowledge. The knowledge would include, you know, understanding of the law, all that. We need to have that. And I also thought that we need to have a category which talks about skills. Skills and the knowledge are not necessarily the same thing. You may be knowledgeable, but we actually find that you don't have the skills. And I think one of the things that, one of the attributes that came from the Southern African Catholic Bishops Conference was the need to ensure that the person has excellent investigative or forensic investigative skills.
I think that is also very important. And I think we can also then have another category, which is my third category, experience. Obviously, in terms of the act, I think in the act makes it very easier for us. I hope the members agree with me. Because when it mentions the judge, it assumes that the judge already has extensive experience in place. It assumes that you are, you know, you are not improper in any manner or whatever. That's the assumption. And I do therefore think that maybe with the committee may consider to actually make sure that we make this process as credible as possible by ensuring that, not because I'm also an academic as well, but I think it's very important that we must at least, when we are considering the criteria, we must consider judges. Because if you are a judge, anyway, you are already independent, you are assumed to be independent. And I'm hoping Kasha is very happy there, because I did promise you that I will persuade my members. So if my members don't agree with me, it's not my fault, okay? It's all your fault, not me. I am communicating what they said. And I think experience is very important, because you will be this person, and we've seen with Honorable Advocate Madutsela that it's very, very important to actually understand the context under which you operate. And I think that comes with a lot of experience. I don't think it's something that we should take for granted. And the last column, I thought that it's got to do with the moral esteem / rationality test or whatever. Your fit and proper is very important. And I would put a lot of weight on the rationality, and the fit and proper. I would put a lot of weight on that, because if you are fit and proper and your rationality test is beyond reproach, I think that you will be able to act independently. And again, I think this is going to be something fundamental that as the committee we should at least break those things. Whatever we decide, we can decide that under this broad category of moral values, that's rationality test, you know, you have all your written proper in that column. Then under the experience, you put the kind of experience that the person has, because it's also very important. And under skills, we must not underplay the communication skills. They are very important. And again, we've seen this with, especially with Selby Bagwa as our first public protector, and we've also seen it a lot with Advocate Madutsela. This ability to be able to communicate and to continuously be known that you are there. And your issue, Honorable Sir, I think it comes under that. Because if we are saying you also have to be perceived to be doing that, then your communication skills also have to be very important. Because if you are going to be doing the good work, and you simply sit there and you don't communicate what is happening, you may be perceived as not doing the work when you are actually probably are doing work. And obviously I said it and all it. I don't know if the members would be happy with considering those broad four categories and as something that we will have to zoom into. And the reason why I am mentioning this broad category, I'm trying to get members, when they make their motivation for the person that should be shortlisted, whenever we do it, if we're going to be doing it today or if we're going to do it tomorrow, I don't know, we'll decide later on. But I would like you to be able to, when you are motivating, tell us what is it that you picked up from that particular individual in terms of the broad categories, so that at least we are taking into account the public input, because we've received quite a number. Are there any other comments on the criteria, members, or any other messages that would like to mention? Yes, Honorable Sir?
I've seem to miss that you mentioned management skills in that role, because I think that is, Erica Bonga mentioned that as well, and it's a big office. So I think that is an issue that needs to come up. We on the Justice Committee are aware of issues that have arisen in the past, management issues in various offices, including the public protector. I think it's a huge issue that one needs to also bear in mind that could be part of your skills, and that management skills is very important for this office as well.
I certainly agree. In fact, I think the other aspect that comes with managerial skills is HR skills. You must be able to manage your human resources as well. And the other thing that is going to be very important to me going forward is that we really, really have to find a way to strengthen provincial offices so that even the provincial offices, this person must be able, hence the issue of HR becomes absolutely important, because you must be able to, you know, transfer the skills, make sure that you also update some of the functions, you know, and make sure that those offices are also doing it, that they are doing their part. I know that there are issues around finding the allocation, the budgets, and what have you, and I would like to speak about that because I'm in finance and most of you are in justice, and I can tell you that we can't afford that to say, so I'm not going to put finance issues there. Yes, Honorable Masondo.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And that's all that's very important now that the question of management has been raised, to also raise quite strongly the question of leadership. Because leadership is often something that we don't talk about that much, or we just talk about it in person, and we sometimes just bundle it up with management. But leadership capabilities and related expertise is quite critical. If you have a person who will make the necessary impact to institutions and to society in general.
Members, are there any comments on this issue? Yes, Honorable Mashiach.
Thank you, Chair. I think let's not try to add more criteria to whatever we have. Let's stick to what is in front of us and deal with that, because if we keep on adding 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, we won't finish. And we would have changed the reference points and the criteria that we are going to use for shortlisting. Thank you.
I certainly think you have a point there, but it's important. The starting point in any case, we have to start with the legislation. What the legislation says. And when you are shortlisting, it actually is not as simplistic as that. Because when you are shortlisting, remember, you may actually have more than 50 people who meet the criteria as spelled out in the Act, and you then need additional attributes that are beyond just what is in the legislation. And I think it was important for members to isolate some of the attributes or qualities that will be required. Members, can we move to the next item in the agenda? And that is the number of candidates to be shortlisted. Do members have the number? And I must warn you, members, my own assessment even looked through this, and obviously I have not necessarily taken into account the objections or even verified some of the things that have been said by members of the public. But I think it's going to be very important for us to make sure that as much as possible we are inclusive in the process. In mind, I actually sometimes we tend to forget this. South Africa is still actually in the process of building its non-racial character. And I think we need to have that non-racial character. As we are thinking about the people that we are shortlisting, over and above looking at the minimum requirements in terms of the legislation, we need to factor that into account. And I don't know, I'm sure Honorable Sheikh will agree with me, probably because the outgoing public protector is a woman. Don't you agree with me that we also need to make sure
but I'm canvassing you now.
No,
and
you
honorable.
I agree 100%
with what we said there. So when you guys are actually coming up with whoever, I'm not suggesting that you do what I am saying, but I'm merely saying to you, let's try as much as possible to reflect the character of society that we want. We want to reflect non-racial character of society. We want to reflect a non-racist character of our society. It should be an antithesis, therefore, if when we are shortlisting, we come with an all-boys choir. It will not work with me. And I'm sure with other women in the house, it will not work with us. Yes, Honorable.
Thank you very much, Chair. And I wholeheartedly agree with you that South Africa is a non-racial and non-sexist country. And I think women are playing a very critical role in making sure that we are building the economy that is very strong and a strong nation, actually. But I thought that Honorable Motapo, actually, she raised it as part of the solution criteria, the issue of gender and the issue of demographics of the country. So I thought that it's not yet in your table.
Thank you very much,
Honorable.
Honorable Kuranov? And Honorable Maisala after Kuranov.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. You know, if we look at the number of candidates to be shortlisted, we must realize that they all compete for the same job. And because of that, we must try to do the interviews in one day. So, you know, because they must be in and out, and they must not have the benefit to watch what the others have done. So I think we must bear that in mind. You know, we're going to spend more or less 45, 60 minutes per candidate. It might be shorter, it might be shorter for others and longer for others. But so my suggestion is that we should not go beyond 10 members in terms of the shortlisting process at the most.
Suggestion now that we should not go beyond 10. Yes, Honorable?
Chelo, I want to strongly support the proposal at least that we should increase to around 10, looking at the number of people that are contesting and the number of questions that we've imposed.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay, there was nothing else that said, I think it speaks to the number of candidates that we are going to shortlist. I'm not sure if it was you, Honorable Motako, or Josh Bongo. Somebody raised an issue around allocating time. So to ensure that the process is fair, we need to allocate time for each shortlisted candidate to come here and make their case. I think it will be very important because then if we agree on that, on the time that we are going to allocate for each candidate, then that should inform how many candidates we should, you know, we should go for. There's already a suggestion for 10, maximum 10, and there has been a seminar on that. And there was a suggestion, we speak to this, we said maybe let's allocate, I don't know how many minutes, for per candidate. What would you like to do? You want to clarify it?
Yeah, that's it. I think I support the 10. In line with what I've proposed earlier, because it will still be around 8 to 10 hours, the 45 minutes, that each candidate had 45 minutes, and the 45 minutes we divided into two, 20 and 25. The 20 must be about the presentation on the issues that they've raised, and 25 is an engagement with the members of the committee.
So we will have to craft the letter in such a way that each candidate will have to understand that there will be four broad areas that they will have to speak on, but it doesn't necessarily, it's not restricted. They may bring other issues they may wish the committee to consider in that when they actually do that interview. Is there a seconder for that proposal that is put forward by Bongo?
of 20 minutes, or is 20 minutes too much? This
another short. We've done many interviews over the years of different commissions, and I don't think it's, why should the candidate be given so long to present yourself? The key part is for us to ask the hard questions. If we're going to allow a candidate to make a submission to be short, it should be 5 minutes, 10 minutes, then we need to engage at much longer period. That is the main thing that we say for each candidate, an hour, and we're not bound by that. And then we have a 10-minute where they highlight where they think on those criteria they are strong. And then even 10 minutes is long enough. That the important part is going to be us engaging and delving in. We've had experiences in the past where, in fact, we had a nominee in the Human Rights Commission that went right through Parliament, and only afterwards did we realize there was something that was not disclosed, and Parliament had to go back. Members of the Justice Committee will remember that. We had to then revoke our resolution because we hadn't gone in depth with the question. That's the key part of the whole process, will be that questioning. So whilst I support and give bongo with the applicant being allowed to motivate themselves for us, maybe we'll make it very short. Then we also just on the number of 10, I would ask what motivates 10, and you seem to indicate it is the time, but we don't have to limit ourselves to one day. My experience from the Magistrates Commission, we should 3-4 days if necessary. Obviously we want to finalize it, but that should not be a criteria to finalize everything in one day, therefore only 10 candidates. I'm not opposing the 10 candidates, but I'm saying if it's a criteria of time, then we need to think that we can sit over a day. We don't have to confine ourselves to interviews just for one day necessarily. Thank you, Chair.
Members, if I can get in, I think we have 2 proposals on the table, and both of them have been motivated. We have 20 minutes for a candidate, and we have at least 10 minutes, maximum 10 minutes for the candidates to present themselves. And I want you to speak specifically on that. And regarding the days, how many days we are going to interview the member, the people who would have been shortlisted, I happen to have said to have been a member of the demarcation board and were interviewed by judges. And the way it happened there, I think it's something that I can share with you. It was for one day, and all candidates had to arrive at the same time. And the reason why that was done, it was to ensure that the process does not give other candidates a competitive advantage over others, because others would know what sort of kind of questions are coming, say, from ACDP or EA or NCEFF or whatever, and then you end up with the other candidate coming, being more prepared the following day, and it becomes unfair on other candidates that will be coming the following day. So that affects the number of the candidates that we should have. But secondly, I also think that it's important for candidates as well to feel that the process is fair, free and fair. Like, for example, if we are going to say 10 minutes, the reason why I agree with, whether it's 10 minutes or 15 minutes or 20, but I agree with the idea of giving candidates, you know, the same amount of time from which to come and present their case, it's because we are therefore giving them equal space to sell themselves, to convince the ad hoc committee whether they are, you know, competent or they are eligible to be the next public protector. So I agree with that, but I also think that we must not go to the second day. I think let's limit it to one day. Even if we start earlier, probably we might start our interviews at 9, and we must be prepared to go until very late. Is that agreeable, members?
It is agreeable. I think the reason why I also suggested 20 days, I appreciate Honorable Swar that look at the children that are here. You can't say 10 minutes, and you're downplaying the principles that we already agreed on. Look, we've got to test character, therefore, issues, we've got to test the knowledge, experience, and skills. So there might be some time. I think we must just allow the candidates.
members, I know you are going to take, you
know,
sometimes I always remind my members that I'm a technocrat. And it's nice sometimes, you know, because you have to make, people must make decisions. Bedenbach, you have a point of exigence that is free. Okay, come in.
I cannot contemplate sitting listening to people ramble on about themselves for 15 minutes at a time for an entire day. 10 minutes, the questions are the things that we need to engage with on the issues that Bongo is raising. We need to question them about those issues instead of us, and not for them to sell those things to us. 10 minutes is more than enough to hear about them waffling on about themselves.
Okay, I'm coming with the very clear. I don't want us to debate this anymore. We are going to communicate to the nominees that they have between 15, maximum 15 minutes. I mean, 10, maximum 15 minutes from which to present the argument. Is that a fair compromise? Yeah. 10 to 15 minutes, maximum. I will be telling, remember. I'm not going to allow them a second, and I can assure you. I'm not going to allow them a second to go up after. It's also going to prove whether they are efficient, you know, with their time. Yes, Honorable Sir?
Chair, I think we can live with 15 minutes max. But then, Madam Chair, let me take it from me, because I do the interviews around mayoral candidates. You must stop them in mid-sentence and stop to 15 minutes, because otherwise they ramble on and ramble on and ramble on.
Time will be clearly communicated. There will be no ambiguities. Candidates must know that they will not be given not even a second extra to finish a sentence. So they must come here prepared. They have time to research. They have to know who they are, because members are going to probe them. Okay. I think let's move on, members. I think we are making some progress here. Let's move on to the next item, which is the... No. We are saying, you didn't get us. We are saying for the candidate for the nominee is going to have between 10, maximum 15 minutes to present their case. The rest of the time is going to be for questioning. It's going to be members probing the candidate. And it's good to also, you know, I think it's fair to give them that time, because sometimes as politicians, and we must know our own weaknesses, we will start in one question in this particular unlucky candidate, and they end up not saying the things that they wanted to say. So this 10 to 15 minutes is fair, so that candidates have the opportunity to communicate their own story. Because as politicians, we want our own stories heard sometimes. And I think we love hearing ourselves. So, yeah. Let's move on. Okay, members. So the thematic questions, number 4, we've agreed on that the knowledge, and I think Bonani or Christine, if you could assist the members on the in these different areas, make sure that under knowledge, you know, the constitutionality matters, the legal matters, you know, understanding the public finance management, understanding the workings of the state and whatnot, that's like, I'm saying, please pull out some pointers so that even the members, they can go and start doing their own research on those areas. We said it's knowledge, skills, it's experience, and the moral value system plays nationality test. So, I mean, I'm saying act on all those things, the fit and proper, you know, with acting without fear, favor, or prejudice and all that under those. If you prepare that for members as well. But you must also tell the candidates that these are the broad areas that the committee has agreed on. However, if they have other issues that they think are pertinent, that you need to know, they can act within that 10, 15 minutes max. Okay? Thank you. Yes?
Then saying it will be about 45 minutes for the us to ask questions, but it's not limited necessarily, but would we be aiming for an hour, or is there, what are your thoughts?
No, members, can you get on the time? I honestly think that we need I mean, and you remember, there is a reason why in Parliament we get given the exact meat to speak on, because they know the kind of animals we are. We can speak forever. We love platforms. So I think let's have that. It's a good consideration, Honorable Swap. Can we have that? 45 minutes or 1 hour, max? I don't know. I want to hear from you. Honorable Swap?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I think that the time for questioning will vary from candidate to candidate, depending on who they are. But I agree with capping the time, because I agree with you. People have a habit of talking more than they should. But then you need to cap answers as well. Because the candidates can then talk for 25 minutes on one question and then avoid being asked critical other questions simply because the time runs out. So my suggestion would be, again from experience of my own, that you limit it to maybe 2 to 3 minutes per question that gets asked.
Okay. Let me undertake to look into those modalities and we can communicate that with you. I think the indication I'm getting here is that we should consider capping, that you know, we should consider capping the time to 45 minutes or
maybe we should say as far as possible, because we might run over. As far as possible we try to
That far is over, no. As far as possible we can go very far.
I'm just going to interview in the middle of a very contentious issue and you saved time with the last interview.
Yeah.
And you might
You know, the thing is, can I make a ruling on this? We shall not spend more than an hour on one interview. We shall not spend more than an hour. In other words, 45 minutes, the clock starts ticking. Not only to the nominee, but also to us, to know that, you know, the clock is ticking. And we will try to control the time that the nominees are spent on answering questions. Is that agreed, my brother? Please. Okay. Brother, my son?
Minutes, I think, is more than adequate if you want to get what you want to get out of the session. I mean, it's not the first interviews we are doing. We have been doing interviews. After 45 minutes, you are super rambling, or you are trying to trick somebody into answering what you didn't want. You know, if you are concentrated, you know what you want. 45 minutes from beginning to end is allocated to your candidate. At last, if he can't do it, we'll get those 45 minutes.
Honorable Prenoff?
Thank you, Chairperson. I agree. I think 45, not longer than 60 minutes, but it's in your discretion. And you must also then cap the replies, because that's important, but also cap those members who are putting the questions. So there must be also rules going towards those questioning again.
Okay, thank you. I think we've exhausted this gentleman. Let's move on. Huh? Yeah, from us as well. No point of order. We are going to rewrite the rules of conducting interviews in Parliament. Okay, members. The date for the interview members. We thought that the interview should be. We considered. We looked at the date. We are putting forward to you the 11th of August. Is that a date that all of you will be comfortable with? And the reason why we decided to, I'm talking about myself and the administration, because those are the people that we try to figure out how it's going to work. On the 9th day, the holiday, the Women's Day, some women are going to be participating in a range of activities at parliamentarian here. And men, too, because of course you are absolutely right. I didn't know you are so progressive, man. That's good. It's 11th, okay, man? Oh, okay, good. Hey, we're doing very well. I wish we can get to the shortlisting as quick as we are getting through this. I am so hit. I'm so impressed, you members. And I can see where we are going. Members, Sorry,
Honourable Chair. Not sure if we've agreed on the number of candidates, if we've decided on the time. the proposal was for the 10 candidates, and I think we need to have a discussion around about that.
Okay, I thought we had agreed that it's going to be a maximum of 10. In other words, we are not going to try and push it. In other words, we are getting it to a maximum of 10. In other words, when we are, remember, in this 10, the maximum of 10, we said we are going to ensure that we actually have a true reflection of the South African society. We are also going to make sure that we take into account the gender question, and we therefore said we are keeping it to 10. In other words, we can come with those people that we think must make it to the shortlist, but they must not exceed the 10. Okay. Because if the committee decides that it's 6 or it's 5, then it's okay. We don't have to be, it doesn't have to be 10. But as long as it meets those stringent criteria, the one being, the primary one being what the Act provides. And then the other things. Okay. Bonani, I have a meeting with the House Chair. And I would like to adjourn the meeting at this stage because we are finalizing the whole issues, or the process issues. Now, I was thinking that the members, if you don't mind, can we, because I don't like, remember, I live in Durban, and I have to travel all the time back to Cape Town. I'm just appealing to members. Can the members get the, you make sure that all the members, they have the comments of the short-listed candidates, and probably we reconvene, say, at 2. At 2, and we go and we do some justice. I know that we will never have enough time. I'm really pleading with you, members, that we must solve this today. Because you have the opportunity to read through the CVs. And now what you need to do is to actually compare and contrast the information that is in the CV and compare it with the information that you shall get today. And maybe we reconvene at 2, and then we can start with the shortlisting process. Honourable Sir?
Thank you, Chair. I am grateful for that concession. But let me just try and find out, have you got questionnaires for every single candidate?
Okay, let me explain. Maybe it was an omission on my part not to mention this question of the questionnaires. We made it clear to the candidates that if you have not responded to this questionnaire, your name will automatically fall off. So we have received 56 because we also put a closing date, which was the 8th. It was running parallel with the time when we opened the window for comments or objections from members of the public. Is that fine?
Yes, Chair, I tell you why I asked questions, because I just used the illustration, not that I intend to support his nomination, of Advocate Darlene Porfu. Now, what we've got here is a 3-page CD. That's what we have in the original pack. Now, I have had the benefit of reading his questionnaire, and that contains far more detail and far more information than is contained in the 3-page CD. So the question that I'm asking is, are we going to get all 56 questionnaires now? And will we have enough time to digest those questionnaires by 2 o'clock this afternoon?
You know, the thing is, we've, as much as possible, members are given the CVs up front so that they can do their own due diligence. That was one of the primary reasons why we sent the CVs in first instance. Secondly, we also made sure that the comments that were already there on the website, the comments. So I would expect that the members, it is reasonable to expect that the members would have been checking the comments as they were being made. And I therefore really think that if we are going to be postponing this to another day, we are really not being economical with time. And I am therefore making a ruling.
I know it's not a popular one. I am saying, can we reconvene at 2? Can our members go and actually get this and make sure that they get whatever information that they need? The staff is going to be there to assist if you need more information. As I said to you, the comments, as I said to you, I've counted, I think it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. The comments that we have that are from other, that are from the members of the public, other than those from Corruption Watch. Because from Corruption Watch, I authorize the staff to email that document to you as is. So that one, which is the longest document, with 175 pages, you got it on time. Unfortunately, members, I can't, you see, I have to be fair, Honorable Denver. I can't be pushing stuff and I'm not pushing you.
Yes, I see. What I'm laughing at is that you say you authorize the staff to send it to AFIC as is. I was just wondering on what basis you would have the authority to authorize them to edit it before they sent it to AFIC.
No. You know, but you see, Honorable, I'm not going to answer that question. I'm trying to slip off my powers. I'm very jealous of them. I'm going to keep it like that. Okay, members, can we?
Not 9 o'clock. It's not 12 o'clock. Are those documents ready now? Are they ready now for us? That's what we need to do.
Yeah, my colleagues have advised me that the documents are ready, so we're going to be back to your office after the session.
Why don't they bring them here? So the members can they let the members wait here. Let them get them the documents here. Let's not be out. Honorable Mussman?
Yes, Chair. I'm glad that you have said that you stayed deaf and so you know that the last train to deaf and half past 5. I'm happy with starting at 2, but what happens if come 4 o'clock we are not finished? Two things could happen. A member could ask to be excused, which is bad, or a member can then leave tomorrow.
Actually requested the secretariat, probably they can respond. I requested the secretariat to appeal to members to to allocate this whole day, because I was worried that in case we don't finish, we may actually end up finishing much later than 5. I had requested that, and I'm not sure if it's communicated that Bonani. Or Bonani saying it did communicate that. Anyway, I've had allegations that we communicate only to the NC. By the way, I'm NC, and my members, Honorable Swartik, was that communicated to you at an ACDP? Thank you very much. You see, I'm a very fair chair. President Bach, was it communicated to the DA? No. You can't say you don't recall. You have a memory of an elephant. It's impossible that you don't recall. Okay, members, let's agree right now. Let's adjourn this meeting. I'm going to meet with Honorable Frode just to sort out the process issues. Remember, there are quite a number of other issues. There are issues where we need to, I need to sit down with him, because all those shortlisted candidates, they have to be vetted as well, you know, to go through that vetting system, whatever. And we need Parliament to assist with that. What is the other thing? I think there was also the issue around the whole issue around qualifications. We've had lots of standards in South Africa with qualifications, and we do need financial authorization in terms of making sure that we get somebody to actually do that the qualification check as well. So those are the type of issues that I'm going to be engaging with. No, they didn't bring their original qualifications, but nowadays, Honorable President, I can bring an original qualification, which is disowned by the institution. You see? So that is why we want to do that. Thank you, Member. We are adjourning. Thank you.
Thank you.